It's 11:35, Newfoundland Standard Time. Stay tuned for the Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine, with Paul Moth. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, 520 on the long wave.
It was December 21st, 1960, last day of first term, grade 6. We were all watching the clock, counting down the minutes, waiting for that most joyous of Christmas bells, the one releasing us from the pedagogical prison, the gulag of learning that was St. Matthew's Elementary. Just as the glorious bell pealed, our teacher, Sister Mary Ursula, asked that I remain in my seat. My buddies, Rube Snow, Cy Hibbs, and Bill Murphy, charged off to freedom, downtown to the raffles or the shop windows or up to Nagel's Hill with a toboggan in tow. I sat at my desk, wondering what I'd done this time. Sure, I got in a little trouble in school. Minor mischief, nothing serious like the stuff that Rube and Cy used to get up to. Certainly nothing like what Bill was into. And I was a good student. And, geez, this was Bill's third go at grade 6. So why me? And why now? But Sister Mary Ursula made me wait, and wait, and wait. Sitting there, writing in her teacher's planner, in that cramped, sexless hand of hers. I started to daydream, looking out the window onto the frozen grounds of St. Matthew's, a gentle snow filling in the tracks of my departed comrades, erasing. And suddenly she pounced, in one movement, a great black curtain in my peripheral vision, an ivory claw at the end of a monstrous bat's wing, snatching me up out of my seat by the hair, throwing open my desk and finding her shoes. Who knows why I took them? Simply to rebel? I'd been irresistibly compelled to pilfer the sensible brogues back in October. I didn't display them to my buddies like a trophy. Didn't flick them in Rennie's River in an act of defiance. I just liked looking at them on occasion. Liked running my fingers across the pared leather. Liked... And what was to be my punishment for this violation? Sister Mary Ursula said, I'd know. But when? 5 days later, it turned out, when my mother announced that among the guests coming over for a light Christmas Eve supper was none other than Sister Mary Ursula. I could serve a year's detention. I could take the strap until my hands were swollen to briefcases. I could have a dunce cap welded permanently to my head. But I could not have Dad hear of my disgrace. Well, by the time Sister Ursula was sipping her tea and nibbling her Christmas cake, I was in quite a state. Why was she tormenting me? Why not just out with it? Why not offer me up to the wolves, throw me at Dad's doubtful mercy? When the adults got to the end of the second cup, I couldn't bear it. I was ready to confess my sin. And then, time to leave for midnight mass. She thanked my mom and blessed herself. In the vestibule, she stepped into her plastic, translucent galoshes. As she reached for the front door, Sister Mary Ursula turned and looked back at me. Good night, Paul, she said, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
1979. Exeunt decade right. There hadn't been any snow, just freezing rain through to the third week of December. I left the house for the Star of Palestine Hall, the old pal, to pick up some of the props I'd borrowed from Mom. The revival of Country Matters was closing early after depressing houses and vengeful reviews. A smash hit in 1976. What had turned critics and public against my work? How had I gone from wry and restlessly young to overwrought, drenched in pathos, incomprehensible, indulgent, and interminable in 3 short years, and without changing a single word of text? I turned up my collar and bumped into my postman at the corner. He cursed and handed me the letter. The letter I'd waited so long for, I'd forgotten I was waiting. Expensive stationery, upper left-hand corner, embossed hot pink Maud letters, Shirley Productions. Here it is. The tattered shreds still tattered, where I ripped it open all those years of mornings ago. Dear Mr. Moth, we here at SP were thrilled with your Cinderella sequence. Shirley thought it was really happening, too. I quote, "The script fits me like the glass slipper." Not only would we like to purchase the concept, we are prepared to offer you a staff writer's position with SP on a trial basis. Unfortunately, because of our production schedule, we would need you to be in L.A. almost immediately, holiday season notwithstanding. Very impressed. Look forward to meeting you. Andy Stegg, Executive Producer, Shirley Productions. And then a handwritten P.S. from the diva herself. Paul, surely you'll come. Surely. What do you do when you get an offer like that in the mail? You go for the big walk. By the time I'd read the letter the 10th, the 11th, the 100th time, I was in the heart of the old city and starting to get a little tired of the syntax, a little sick of the kitschy pink lettering, a little wary of what Shirley's tidy schoolgirl script and silly sense of humor might hold in store. Sure, I had an overwhelming sense that I'd squandered the entire decade in this backwater, trying to ignite some cultural fire with rotten, wet tinder. Sure, I was persona non grata in most theatrical and social circles. Sure, the weather was miserable and the outlook provincial, the restaurants lousy and the politics corrupt, and the general mood unrelentingly bleak and despairing. But it was home. And just as that sank in, magically, out of the rain, there began to fall big, juicy flakes of snow. Before my eyes, the streets of the old port donned a look of considerable Yule. Its bedraggled and besodden occupants became brisk and chipper and purposefully Victorian. My good old friends, scattered now across the world, would already be setting out on their annual Christmas pilgrimage, coming home on the great towny Hajj. Did it really matter that we had nothing left to say to one another? And my family, who'd soon be filling Mom's parlor with the screeches of life new and old, would put aside the lingering resentments and the festering wounds over a big stuffed bird. My family. Down the way, the Black and Red began to play, the Sally Ann Brass Band. A chill winter blast blew up the street and under my sodden wool overcoat. I was suddenly overwhelmed with the sense that this was my town. These pedestrians and unhurried motorists were my people. This was my place. Could I abandon them on the very eve of our Christmas communion? Could they just be traded in for the random pursuit of celebrity in the City of Angels? The glass, the concrete, the toxic warmth, the arrogant palms and ersatz evergreens of L.A.? La la. The vapid, nubile, lubricious vixens prancing on the beach. The expense accounts. The per diems. The plush. The soft. The easy.
Taxi! Taxi! Airport! And step on it!
Christmas Eve, 1989. Aboard a wide-bodied jet en route from LAX to Pearson, LA to TO. I was in the custody of U.S. Marshal Mitchell Blue Brand. He was executing an order for my deportation from the United States. But Toronto was completely socked in. We were forced to land in Minneapolis. The good marshal rented a big Ford Enigma. He loaded me, shackled, into the passenger side and headed north. We got as far as Daleville, Kitson County, Minnesota. It had been snowing for 6 days. The 80 to Canada was impassable. I had 8 hours to get out of the country. Trouble was a standing bench warrant for my arrest, issued in Pomona County, California. That document had a crafty and willing executioner standing by at the U.S.-Canada border in Emerson, Manitoba. If I didn't make it across the 49th parallel by midnight, Willard Agnew of the LAPD would see me face charges in the Golden State. It was Detective Agnew who had busted me, who had, with a bullet to the heel, put an end to what surely must be one of the most protracted and costly binges in the history of Tinseltown. Willard Agnew was incensed by the deportation order. He thought I was getting off easy, like so many other showbiz types. What odds that I was a Canadian citizen? My crimes had been committed in the U.S. of A. That's where I should face justice. And Willard Agnew was always one step ahead of me. He had arrived at Pearson Airport the day before. Taking measure of the leaden sky and the lake-effect snow, he reasoned that our plane wouldn't land in Toronto and that Emerson, Manitoba, would be our only option. He had vowed to get me, and if I didn't meet the terms of the deportation order, he would. With Daleville, Minnesota, buried under 3 feet of the white stuff, it seemed to me that all was lost. Agnew would get his man. Me. Well, Blue Brand must have seen the despair in my face, must have seen that I wasn't, as Willard Agnew reasoned, a bad man, merely a starry-eyed fellow from a small town who had gotten in over his head, a soul who had lost his way. "You know, Moth," he said, "I did duty in Fairbanks, Alaska." I wasn't listening. I was thinking of San Quentin Prison. "I did some mushing up there," he said. Well, after an hour of flashing his badge around Daleville, he had put together a dog team. He had a husky in the lead, but the rest of the team looked like they were leaving the pound for the rendering plant. There were 2 shamefully groomed poodle crosses, a half-blind lab, an obese shepherd, 3 mangy mongrels, an antique Rottweiler, a ratting terrier with attitude, a border collie with a criminal bearing, and a frightened Great Dane. Marshal Brand had a way with the hound. He just grabbed him by the snout and strapped him in. They knew he was in charge. Well, sir, with 7 hours left, we climbed aboard a makeshift sled and headed out over the snow-covered fields of northern Minnesota. They may not have been the strongest, nor the youngest, nor the best-looking of dogs, but with Blue Brand their master, that team was the most determined pack of mutts I have ever seen. The marshal wielded a stern but merciful whip. He sent it snaking out over those curs' heads, cracking in their ears, more setting time than scolding them to action. I could tell by the way he handled the lash that while Marshal Brand was a stern man, he could not conscience punishment for its own sake. He knew I had learned my lesson. It seemed we had been mushing an eternity when, with my tightly bound extremities near frozen, I saw it. Through the blizzard, the halogen glow of the border crossing at Emerson. The sled pulled up to the station. Willard Agnew was there on the American side. He checked his watch and then reached for the revolver at his ankle. "Run, Paul!" shouted Marshal Brand. And run I did, like I've never run before. Through the snow, my feet first slipping and then finally striking pavement, my stride sound, building momentum, until with a mighty leap I was over the border. With one hurdle, out of a backward militarist empire and into a reasonable, though shaky, welfare state, out of harm's way and back, safely back, in Canada. I looked through the streaked glass into the customs house. There, on the wall, the clock struck 12. The radio was tuned to CPSU out of Winnipeg. And this song was playing. "Merry Christmas, Blue Brand, wherever you are."
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here, it stays pretty green. I'm gonna make a lot of money, then I'm gonna quit this crazy scene. I wish I had a river I could skate away on. So long, I would teach my feet to fly. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away. to help me, you know. He put me at ease, and he loved me so. Naughty made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I'm so hard to handle. I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I've gone and lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away.
I'd like to take this opportunity to wish you the best of the holidays from everybody here at the Great Eastern. We've been overwhelmed by your response to our show. The mail has poured in, and we love reading it. Thank you. It's really made 1996 a year to remember. And Merry Christmas, Mom. I've been listening to The Great Eastern, live from our St. John studios. Our holiday engineer is Hollis Duffett, and the director of radio is Ish Lundrigan. Please write us with your comments, questions, and answers. Care of the BCN, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland, A1C 1H5. Or you can deliver the mail yourself to our email address, greateastern@stjohns.cbc.ca. Check out our website. You get there by clicking on CBC Radio's homepage, and we're under the arts section. My name is Paul Moth. Join me again next Saturday for the Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine.
The Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland wishes you and yours a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.